Hester Prynne looked into his face but hesitated to speak. Yet, uttering his long-restrained emotion so vehemently as he did, his words here offered her the very point of circumstances in which to interpose what she came to say. She conquered her fears and spoke. "Such a friend, as thou hast even now wished for," said she, "with whom to weep over thy sin, thou hast in me the partner of it." Again she hesitated, but brought out the words with an effort. "Thou hast long had such an enemy, and dwellest with him under the same roof." The minister started to his feet, gasping for breath, and clutching at his heart, as if he would have torn it out of his bosom. "Ha! What sayest thou?" cried he. "An enemy, and under mine own roof. What mean you?" Hester Prynne was now fully sensible of the deep injury for which she was responsible to this unhappy man, in permitting him to lie for so many years, or indeed for a single moment, at the mercy of one whose purposes could not be other than malevolent. The very contiguity of his enemy, beneath whatever mask the latter might conceal himself, was enough to disturb the magnetic sphere of being so sensitive as Arthur Dimmesdale. There had been a period when Hester was less alive to this consideration, or perhaps, in the misanthropy of her own trouble, she left the minister to bear what she might picture to herself as a more tolerable doom. But of late, since the night of his vigil, all her sympathies towards him had been both softened and invigorated. She now read his heart more accurately. She doubted not that the continual presence of Roger Chillingworth, the secret poison of his malignity infecting all the air about him, and his authorized interference as a physician with the minister's physical and spiritual infirmities, that these bad opportunities had been turned to a cruel purpose. By means of them, the sufferer's conscience had been kept in an irritated state, the tendency of which was not to cure by wholesome pain, but to disorganize and corrupt his spiritual being. Its result on earth could hardly fail to be insanity, and hereafter, that eternal alienation from the good and true of which madness is perhaps the earthly type. Such was the ruin to which she had brought the man once, nay, why should we not speak it, still so passionately loved. Hester felt that the sacrifice of the clergyman's good name and death itself, as she had already told Roger Chillingworth, would have been infinitely preferable to the alternative which she had taken upon herself to choose. And now, rather than have had this grievous wrong to confess, she would gladly have lain down on the forest leaves and died there at Arthur Dimmesdale's feet.
"Oh, Arthur," cried she, "forgive me. In all things else, I have striven to be true. Truth was the one virtue which I might have held fast, and did hold fast through all extremity, save when thy good, thy life, thy fame were put in question. Then I consented to a deception. But a lie is never good, even though death threaten on the other side. Dost thou not see what I would say? That old man, the physician, he whom they call Roger Chillingworth, he was my husband.